backfires, and prisons, in fact, become schools of revolutionary political education. And these groups, in fact, proliferate in the prisons. And that politicization interacts with the intense repression that these groups were facing, which gives rise to these different forms of rebellion that emerge all throughout the prisons. Attica happened to be one of the most brutal prisons in New York State, and in fact, in the country, where many of the most political and most intellectual, most charismatic people were transferred and repressed, and it turned into a tinderbox.
Professor Burton, that's where the wildcat prison guard strike is. Jose Saldana, we just have 20 seconds.
They have engaged in illegal activity, and they will continue to escalate that illegality. We are building a movement to dismantle this racial brutality. But in the meantime, we have to get people out of that brutal system. We have legislation, elder parole, fair and timely, second look at. These legislation will help relieve people out of these systems of brutal oppression and unite them back to their families.
I want to thank you both for being with us. Jose Saldana, director of RAP, and Arsanmi Burton, author of Tip of the Spear, Black Radicalism, Prison Repression, and the Long Attica Revolt. He's also professor of anthropology at American University. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM.
This is KBOO Portland. From its founding, KBOO's purpose has been to serve as a community-driven alternative to mainstream media. In a new year, with numerous executive orders from a new presidential administration and the rise of misinformation, KBOO affirms its duty to serve its community. KBOO, its programmers, volunteers, and staff do this by bringing you accurate information, by giving space to underrepresented voices, and by uplifting arts and culture. In these uncertain times, KBOO seeks to be a guiding light for those who are scared, those who are affected, and those who are fighting the good fight. KBOO stands with the immigrant community, the LGBTQIA+ community, the disability community, and all of those affected by the new administration. We stand here at 90.7 FM in Portland, 104.3 FM in the Corvallis-Philomath area, 91.9 FM in Hood River, and at kboo.fm.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Roland.
Don't you know you can count me in, out, in, out. Be all right, be all right, be all right. See, you've got a resolution, well, you know. Well, I'd love to see you comply. You ask for a contribution, well, you know. Well, do it what you can. One money, people mind that, hey. I'll tell you, brother, have to wait. Constitution, well, you know. Well, wanna change your head. An excellent institution, well, you know. Better for your mind instead. Go kind, pick your chairman, Mal. Gonna make it anyhow. Alright, alright, alright. Alright.
And good morning, everybody. You are listening to Wednesday Talk Radio. I am your host, Paul Roland. Don't seem to be getting anything out of my headphones. Hopefully, I'll be able to take care of that. Anyway, I'm here live, and you can call from too little to too much. All right. Okay, so hold on. Okay, there we go. It's weird when you don't hear your own voice in your headphones. And especially when you call or start calling me up at 503-231-8187. All right. I didn't get much sleep last night, but that's not your problem. Unless I just start wandering off. Okay, we are live and we are in the studios here in right near the Burnside Bridge in inner southeast Portland, coming at you live on the radio. And we are a talk show, so we invite callers to call in. I am by myself again this morning. Yes, okay. So, I'm not sure how much longer I'll be doing the show. I'm just going to put that out there. Without getting too much into my internal dynamics, it's just I've been having a bit of a rough time. As you know, I took off for about, 5-6 weeks there when my mother was ailing and finally died a few weeks ago. And I've been having a serious hip injury for the past several months, et cetera, et cetera. And I just feel like I haven't actually been able to devote the kind of time I need to make this a really good show, to keep recruiting good guests as I have over the years and all that. So I'm just not sure. But so if you don't hear me, then you know that I just wasn't able to go on. But we don't need to talk about that. We need to talk about what you want to talk about. But I, first of all, was really, really encouraged to hear too much information yesterday talking about this group, Worth Fighting For, St. John's. I thought that was, it's kind of what I wanted, how I have been in the back of my mind wanting to respond to what's happening in the United States of America under the second Trump regime, or Musk regime, whatever you want to call it. And I'm so glad that Abe and Tracy were able to have those folks on, because I think it's what we need to do. And if you didn't hear it, you feel free to go back and check that out on our website, kbo.fm, too much information, 8 to 9 a.m. yesterday. So it's a group that, a grassroots group that just started up spontaneously. So people who knew each other, know each other in St. John's, and are dismayed, angry, whatever, about the course of events, and decided, let's just get together and see what we can do, without knowing where it was going to head, whether anybody would join in. That's the way grassroots groups that I've been involved in have gotten started and made a difference. So they're going, and now they've got committees. They're working on immigration, responding to ICE raids, helping people who are afraid to go out, immigrants who are afraid to go out to the grocery store, go to the doctor, whatever. And so they're arranging rides for people. It's just, basic, starting out with the basics. And then, reporting ICE raids and controlling rumors, because there's a lot of rumors flying around. I've seen posts about ICE is here, and sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. So yeah, and then getting working groups to work on actual organizing, actual campaigns. So they didn't really give people a chance to call in and talk. So I thought I'd give you a chance, if you happen to hear that show, if you know about Worth Fighting For, St. John's, if you're involved in that group. It's certainly a conversation worth continuing. If you have started some kind of project or campaign or group yourself, or if your organization group is, you know, has been doing, devoting some of their organizing to responding to what's going on under Trump Musk 2, please call in at 503-231-8187. Looks like we've already got a caller. Who's on the line, Ty? Jeff, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks, Paul. I'm going to get out of the way here because I did hear yesterday's program, and it was excellent, and I'm very encouraged. I'm very encouraged, especially with the community in St. John's and North Portland. They're doing a yeoman's work in what they're doing to organize, because the fear is palpable. You literally can feel the fear in the air and in the students of the schools and so forth. But I just wanted to divert for a second and get your take, if you'll permit me to ask for it, on the Paul McCartney and a bunch of musicians have put together an LP, an album, of nothing but studio sounds in protest of AI and its attempted takeover of the work of musicians. I don't know if you've heard of it or not.
No, I haven't. I'm glad to hear that.
Well, I just wonder who all would buy an album of nothing but studio sounds and mouth sounds, but they've done it, and I thought maybe to get your take on it, but if you haven't heard about it, that's fine. I will get out of the way and let someone from St. John's tell us more about what that community is doing to combat the current nightmare.
Well,
thank you.
It's okay. Thank you for calling in. It's not a guarantee that anybody from that group or even St. John's is actually listening to this show, so don't want to count on that. But AI, I actually have been wanting to devote entire programs to the subject of AI for some time, because it on one sense it's sort of just the logical next step, or arc of the development of technologies and the intersection between computers and the human brain and a whole thrust of things that have been going on for decades, centuries. Mechanization. How far do you want to go back? The large-scale social organization. The development of machines, the development of capitalism, the development of mechanized factories, the development of the computer, and it's been the wet dream of these technologists for quite some time. People have been talking about some version of artificial intelligence for. I think it goes back even to the early days of the computer, and I'm on a computer right now, but like many technologies that I use, because there's no easy alternative, and because of force of habit, because they're there, whatever. Some people in their jobs are forced to use it more and more. I mean. What work now doesn't involve the computer? And so an AI is just insinuating itself just the way computers have. Telephones, electricity, computers, it's all of a piece. The way that technologies have developed without, as tools of the ownership class to consolidate and extend their control and profit. It has these seeming trickle-down benefits to people, but by and large, it just continues to enable greater social control and greater profits and greater alienation from the natural world. So that's my general take on AI. And of course, the power of big tech, which has consolidated in the past two decades, especially, you know, the development of the personal computer, the development of, you know, these highly sophisticated softwares, et cetera, and the, you know, the natural tendency for capitalism to go in a monopoly direction, the irony of the idea that this is, you know, free enterprise or competition always has led to consolidation of economic power and control and the rise of the mega corporations. So it's just inevitable it's inevitable in a way that, you know, Musk has, well, it's, you know, what's inevitable, what's not inevitable? These are really difficult questions. It seems inevitable because that's what happened. In retrospect, it seems like with the establishment of an oligarchy in the United States, oligarchies around the world, and the power of big tech and their rise to prominence in the oligarchy, it seems inevitable that a figure like Elon Musk would arise and exploit the weaknesses in our institutions, in our constitutional system, and ditto Trump, and that we would be in the fix we're in because they're, you know, the controls that were put in place that now they're dismantling, like the Consumer Protection Bureau, whenever that's called, and, you know, you name it, the regulatory mechanisms and agencies that there are that they're trying to dismantle, which the, you know, the radical libertarian capitalists have been trying to dismantle for some time, goes way back even before Reagan. They've got what they wanted, and they may not be their ideal preferred person, but Trump is the sort of figure who gets thrown up in the face of, you know, the Democrats' inability to actually address the real needs of people suffering under a brutal capitalist system. And here we are, and AI is kind of the cutting edge. And how much actual control, you know, the idea that the goal of Musk is to basically run the government like an AI driven financial speculation scheme seems to be the kind of the worst case scenario. To what extent he's actually, you know, actually made that happen, I guess we will see. And to the extent to which the institutions, the fragile institutions, such as they are able to keep that in check. I mean, will the courts, what will happen when it gets to the Supreme Court? I mean, I said last week that it seems like a lot of the Democratic Party is kind of treating this as a test of their faith in the institutions. So, you know, it's as these many, many court cases that seems like the majority of which are actually blocking the Trump-Musk effort to dismantle, seize control, et cetera, to the extent to which, you know, the Supreme Court will uphold those rulings, you know, is an open question. And will it be too late? I guess what I find so inspiring about this small local grassroots effort here in Portland, Oregon, in one neighborhood, St. John's, this Worth Fighting For St. John's group. You can look it up. They actually have a website. Although, as they very clear in stating yesterday, they started basically by word of mouth, and that's the main, and the old posters on telephone poles and probably in cafe windows and such. So they're not waiting to see what happens. They are jumping into the breach, and that's what we got to do. We got to turn up the heat everywhere, like, you know, like those town halls across the country where people are showing their anger at what's going on, to the the Republicans who are in thrall to the, you know, the Trump machine, as it were. It's not really a machine. It's only it's basically a personality cult is what it is. But anyway, you know, our Democrats, I guess, you know, Democratic town halls. I've heard of some town halls here in Oregon that have had really wide attendance. I haven't been following exactly what's been said, if they're actually directing their anger at also the Democratic representatives. It'd be interesting if you know more about that. Please call in at 503-231-8187 if you've attended one of those town halls, what it was like for you. Please don't let me keep talking about all this. I'd like to hear what you've got on your mind. So do you think the institutions will hold? Do you think, how much damage do you think has already been done? 503-231-8187. I could read from a couple articles that I got queued up here. Well, we've got one. I don't know if you've heard some new information, if it is information, has come out about that Donald Trump was actually recruited as a spy by Russian intelligence as early as 38 years ago by the department of a former senior Soviet KGB spy chief and given the codename Krasnov. Kind of interesting. That's one. Then we've got attacking Trump without a positive alternative is a losing game. Trump winning twice. This is from Common Dreams just a couple days ago. Trump winning twice is not an accident. It's the result of the abject failure of a left political strategy that ignores financial reform and attempts to nudge the Democratic Party forward based more on identity than class. That's an old discussion, but always new and fresh. All right, looks like we got a caller. Shay, go ahead. You are on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm slowly waking up. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's a beautiful morning. AI, yeah. I noticed, so there's this thing on the news about, you know, this memo that was sent out from, I think, the White House, where it sounds like it was, you know, at Musk's direction, where it was like, if you want to keep your job, this was issued to federal workers, right, whose jobs are at risk, and it was like, if you want to keep your job, send an email saying 5 things you accomplished this week, and that's to train AI systems, right? So they're mining people for information.
Oh, interesting. That's so obvious that I didn't get it.
Yes. And, you know, I'm like pretty frustrated with people in my life that I run into who are habitually using AI image generators or ChatGPT. I try not to be like a jerk about it, but, you know, these systems, it takes a crazy amount of water to generate one of those AI generated photos
and electricity.
I'm sorry, but most of them are just garbage.
It's so true, you know, but the more it gets used, the better it gets.
Exactly. And so,
better in the sense that, you know, more sophisticated, you know, more close to the real.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, it's tricky because it is becoming ubiquitous. You know, I mean, if you post a selfie on the internet, there's no way that isn't being used to train AI. But, you know, I don't know this kind of, I don't know, it just seems so obvious to me that you're like, the whole thing of like, you know, participating in your own oppression, like these, I don't know. People have differing opinions on this, and I can be a little bit of a Luddite, so I'm sure, you know, there are folks out there who feel very differently about artificial intelligence and are more hopeful that it can be used in ways that are not part of systems of domination. My personal perspective is that it's not worth what it's costing us. You know, it's not worth the resources. And it's exciting to hear. I also heard yesterday, the group in St. John's on the radio, and it was inspiring. And I particularly liked the fact that, you know, a lot of the organizing was analog. And I think that that's going to become especially important as we move forward, because, you know, we already know that systems of surveillance online, I mean, it's made it so easy for the government to do repression of political movements and, you know, put good people in jail. And, yeah, I just think it's increasingly important as the tide is turning and the government is becoming more explicitly authoritarian, that we, yeah, utilize analog methods of organizing and really just resist alienation.
No, you brought up so many points. I almost wish you could do this program. if you want to be a co-host, please get in touch. Anyway.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
It's a serious offer. No, I've just been as I said at the outset, I hate to put out my own internal dirty laundry on the air, but yes, I've been having serious doubts about my ability to continue. And anyway, and KBOO has changed. It used to be, you know, much more open. You know, the pandemic has really affected so many people and institutions in ways that we're still not fully aware of. And we've never fully opened up. It doesn't have the sense of kind of camaraderie and participation that it once did. And anyway, so, but to get back to your specific points, the idea of participating in our own oppression, the mystification of that is what enables capitalism to continue so virulently, is that, you know, our daily lives are rife with participation in our own oppression. It's what they're built upon. If you participate, everything you do within the capitalist framework is that. And AI is just the most sophisticated way, and it the interesting thing is that the way it in being seemingly real, its ability to mystify gets like what's the word, exponentially, there's an exponential thing going on. It gets exponentially more capable of mystifying itself. It's extremely devious. It's incredibly devious, like, you know, the movie The Matrix kind of. But anyway,
I take solace in the fact that, you know, artificial intelligence, with where it's at, it's still just a computer program, you know, at the end of the day. And I try to remind people of this a lot, because it is a very clever computer program, or several programs, but it's still just a computer program. And, you know, a lot of, like, the images that come out are, you know, I call it flop, because it's just, you know, some of it might look intricate or realistic, but there's plenty of it that is just weird and surreal and ugly, you know? And I'm really hoping that people will, I hope that AI continues to make mistakes. I mean, it's alarming that, like, if you Google something right now, you know, there's a little, if you have the AI whatever definition thing enabled on your computer, you know, you might pull up a recipe for something that is just nonsense, or even suggesting something dangerous. And that's alarming, but I hope that it keeps making mistakes, because I really would like for people to recognize that this isn't in our favor, you know?
And hopefully a new generation of Luddites. So that's the other thing I wanted to say is an old Earth First saying was, Ned Ludd was right. And actually, it's, you know, if you look at the history of the Luddites, that was a brilliant but unfortunately failed movement to stop the progression of capitalist hegemonic technology. Anyway, we got a couple other callers on the line.
Oh, Shay? I just wanted to say one last thing. Sure. You know, KBOO, when I was a teenager, is what really opened me up to a lot of radical thinking. So, yeah, analog works. Okay.
Awesome.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Shay. Always good to hear from you. Yeah, and we are going to be coming up on our spring pledge drive before too long, so you will have your opportunity then, but you can do it right now. Go to kbo.fm, click on that old donate button, and support terrestrial radio. We also, you know, we have a website, which I just mentioned, kbo.fm, which is digital, but I am going out to you over the terrestrial airwaves. In other words, from the tower up on the West Hills, or one of our translators out in the Columbia River Gorge and down in Philomath Corvallis area. But I will let Arthur join the conversation right now. Go ahead, you're on the air. Whoop, I lost Arthur. Looks like we got Joel next up on stack, and you too can follow Joel by calling 503-231-8187. Go ahead, Joel.
Hey, love the conversation, and very much agree. I wanted to echo even that, you know, these technologies without full transparency, I mean, absolute full transparency or consent, you know, total rigorous effort to get consent, whether there be these technologies being private or a non-transparent public sphere. You know, in a way, they never are going to rest back any, they're never going to give back, you know, a little transparency. You know, the powerful and the rich aren't going to be like, let's really open up this, you know, algorithm and let's show. So I want to echo that. I think also, you know, people, as the last caller said, people often just quickly go, oh, you know, every generation says, you know, you're living in the past. And I think there's a qualitative difference now. And I think people can't imagine, like, even me, I can't imagine maybe, let's say, getting rid of my smartphone. I started to really think about it. But I think people can hardly imagine now, like, not this major human interaction through the internet. Whereas that's what's been going on tens of thousands of years, and we're set up to do that. You know, I think, believe it or not, I think that's possible that there is a movement actually that goes back to. So I guess I'm just echoing that. I think it's not at all a crazy or utopian thought to say to be a Luddite and to say. You know, the question of what are we even here for? You know, like these futurists, they would say something like, you know, I don't know, you know, profit or to, you know, fulfill all of technology's potentials. But we're just here to, like, I think we're here to have a good life. You know? I mean, I think most people would think that. Like, what are we doing? You know, what is anything for? Well, it's just to facilitate quality of life, is it not? Anyway, I'm echoing, and I'll let it be. Great conversation.
Okay, thank you. Good to hear. Yeah, I agree. And what is a good life, unfortunately, gets co-opted by those who control the means of production and the means of the media and the means of dissemination and the means of distribution. That's you know, it's an old process that, as I said, continually gets mystified. We're continually, it's the water we swim in and the air we breathe. And so you don't notice it anymore. And people who, you know, the Luddites were at a time when actually they were quite popular because they were, you know, they were the majority of people who hadn't been completely alienated from their own means of production. You know, basically, who were the Luddites? The Luddites were a group in England. It was, I think, around the early 19th century who had their own workshops in their own homes. I think they were mostly weavers, and it was a time of the enclosures in England where they were closing the commons where people were able to graze their own sheep and produce their own wool and make it in their own home workshops. And so the enclosures start to shut people off from their ability to raise their own animals, to create their own raw materials for their own production. And then the rise of, you know, it was the beginning of industrialization and the rise of factory machines. And so they start to be able to produce, to force the people who are who are forced off the commons, to force them into factories and to work on the early assembly lines in order to produce more profit for the rising capitalist class. And, you know, that was the closer to the beginnings of this whole process of the rise of modern corporate capitalism, what emerged into modern corporate capitalism. And then, you know, modern high-tech capitalism, financialized capitalism. It was all began, you know, much earlier, if you want to look at the larger arc of human history. But what we see, you know, the real acceleration, the increased acceleration, shall we say, happened at that time. And, you know, the Luddites, Ned Ludd was I believe it's understood that he was a fictional character who may have been based upon an actual person. They went around wrecking those machines of the rising proto-capitalist class in order to protect their own way of life. You know, it still had some aspects of a feudal system. So, you know, it wasn't, you know, complete liberation, but, you know, there was a that's the way history works. You know, there's kind of peaks and plateaus and then troughs, and that was a certain somewhat stable way of life. You know, I've been able to experience, I don't know if I've ever really talked about this, I have experienced a stable, we don't really know almost what a stable way of life is anymore, because the continual pace and acceleration of technological change and changing of our very, you know, urban, suburban, rural landscapes by the ravages of technological intrusion and commodification, it's hard for us to even know. I mean, we can, you know, where we grew up often is completely transformed or disappeared, or where people are, you know, forced through gentrification, through, you know, highway construction, through whatever, are forced to move, are forced to, you know, this is just this continual drumbeat of change. So it's hard to, and once you don't know what a stable way of life is, you don't have that baseline in order to compare. So we're all swimming in this constant pace of rapid change, which allows the agents of that change to maintain and to extend their control. So I lived on a farm in northwest Italy, my father's farm, ancestral farm, in a valley that was relatively unchanged and had a social cultural continuity, because it was the home of the Waldensians, who were this old medieval kind of heretical Christian movement against the power of the papacy. And anyway, I won't get into all that, but because it was a resistant culture, it had a certain, and it was able to fight off the forces of the papacy and even capitalist change for centuries, because people remained, you know, they too got drawn into the especially after World War II with Fiat and everything, Fiat being there in Torino, Italy, which is near this place. Eventually, so people did definitely start to move off the land in droves with the development of the car culture and factory culture. But for centuries, it was resistant. And it was a stable, it was basically a permacultural system where people grew chestnuts and like generally a kitchen garden, maybe a field of potatoes or some other small fields, depending on the landscape. They had a few animals, and it was they grazed them up in the higher mountains and then brought them back down. And, you know, it was a very integrated system and, you know, and ecologically relatively stable and quite stable, actually. And they were able to maintain a way of life. You know, it wasn't, you know, no one was getting super rich. But, you know, people had community and they had each other and they had, you know, they had what they needed and it worked. And it worked for centuries and centuries. So it's very interesting to actually experience a stable way of life as a, you know, as a baseline against, you know, this, whatever you want to call it. So it looks like we got another caller. Who we got up next? Oh, we're still waiting to hear. Bruce?
Yeah.
Oh, Ruth. Sorry, go ahead. You're on the air.
Stephen Hawking says that AI will take our humanity. And, you know, Ron Wyden said to PGE, why do you need this big rate increase? Well, they want to tear up 5 acres of Washington Park for their AI new feature because it takes so much electricity. And, of course, they didn't get their 18% PGE, but they got an increase for that. And
wait a second, this 5 acres of Washington Park for what?
So they can have their AI database because AI takes so much electricity.
They want to have a data center up there in the West Hills?
Well, I don't know that they would put it there, but they need the revenue to build their new AI database. And so they figure the revenue from 5 acres of our wonderful Washington Park. And
so wait, PGE owns 5 acres up there?
They want to harvest 5 acres of our Washington Park. And there is, I heard this on cable a couple of weeks ago. And I know there's a website out there so people can fight that. And PGE didn't get their 18% increase, but they got an increase. And I get my information mostly from the radio. And the thing is, every metropolitan area doesn't need an AI database in order for AI to be in use. So, you know, for taxpayers to be paying so we can tear up the earth even more, I mean, that's just, I think, not the right direction. And I tell friends that, you know, keep in touch with our wonderful Washington people. I mean, and the people in D.C. And I call them every few months. Usually with just one agenda item, but I first of all thank them and say take care of yourself because we need good people in politics. But I think the Oval Office vampires will actually bankrupt us if we're not careful. So yay for the work you do and everybody at every community to find out, you know, what's going on, do what you can. But definitely in our own way, we each need to speak up. And even if you're an old person. And I'll just finish with, I was a hospice volunteer, and just applaud yourself, you know, for what you do with your show and yourself personally, because, you know, we all are social creatures, and we need to support each other in whatever ways we can. Thank you.
Well, thank you. That's wonderful, Ruth. Oh, good to hear from you. I mean, the gains, you know, that have been made supposedly. I mean, the whole issue of quote green or clean energy is so fraught with issues and contradictions, et cetera. But nevertheless, it was cutting into, you know, people were able to actually stop the proliferation of coal-fired power plants and even close a lot of coal-fired power plants because of this shift in energy production. Now, with the rise of AI, they're actually forestalling the closing down of coal-fired plants, which had been slated to be closed down. They're adding new gas-powered plants and not shutting down some gas-powered plants that might have been slated. They're talking about a whole new generation of nuclear energy, including there in Washington, just across the Columbia River from the Google data center, where they want to start having nuclear plants to produce power for these data centers. So what seemed to be this inexorable shift world globally away from fossil fuel generated electricity is completely being reversed. Well, I wouldn't say completely being reversed, because there still is, you know, because the as they actually developed some of these things and put money into the research and development, the cost went down for producing solar plants and wind generation turbines and stuff. So it changed the economies of scale of it. So there is still a lot more, but it is definitely, it's definitely changed the whole landscape of energy production, which is dismaying to say the least. And as my first caller, Shay, said, the use of water was a big issue in the Dalles, because it was basically no transparency at all with the amount of water use that they, you know, because they heat up these, you know, we think, you know, we, you know, I'm guilty of this, storing way too many emails on my, in the cloud, you know, the cloud. It's not a cloud, it's actual physical machines, these servers, which are in these huge banks of servers at these data centers, which is how this whole thing operates, and they heat up, and so they need lots of water to cool them off. The idea of this virtual reality is an illusion. It's actual, like everything else, a material reality that requires resources to keep it going. Anyway, it looks like we got another caller who is Mark. Go ahead, you're on the air. Hello, Mark?
This is Doug.
Okay, Doug, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Well, what I'd like to say is I've heard you're talking about the mini nuclear plants that they want to do right now. Well, I'm very much against that, because, like you said, it's going to use up the water. It's going to contaminate the whole thing. The whole river is going to end up being totally contaminated, and if we allow that to happen, you know, and as we allow it to happen, it happens more, it gets spread out more and more, and gets less and less water that we can drink. Well, eventually this valley is going to be eliminated from having good water, and that's so important. I wish people would catch on to that a little bit more, that is a very important thing, is the water. No matter what they do with these nuclear plants, I mean, they're going to be bad, but between the nuclear plants and the railroads going in there, you know, and carrying all that fracked oil down up the river, we're going to not have anything here in Portland. It's going to just demolish us. I mean, if you go over and look at the Washington side of the river, it's looking pretty bad over there now. But just if we continue to muck up that our rivers, we're not going to have much here.
Well, you know, when I first started doing this show, God, about 12 or 13 years ago, there is kind of the... It was the high point of the Northwest anti-extraction, anti-export, bomb fuel train movement, which was able to shut down a lot of proposed facilities for the export and sometimes import of various fossil fuels, whether it's coal or liquefied natural gas or you name it. And that's going to be, I fear that, now we got Trump, promoting the drill, baby, drill and produce our own, be self-sufficient in producing our own energy. It's going to make all those fights that much harder. All the hard-won victories, I fear, might be reversed. Anyway, thank you for calling. Did you have any final points?
No, I just appreciate your show, and I hope you continue or find somebody that will help you with that, with making keeping your show going, because you've got a good show going.
Well, thank you. I guess this is a that was Doug, and it looks like we might have another caller. I've never been very shy of making an appeal on air, just because it's a little cumbersome, and I don't know. Maybe that's the only way to do it. Because I could use some further assistance in doing this show on a weekly basis. It's I find it a lot to keep you on. So if there's anyone interested. If you go to the website, kbo.fm, go to Wednesday Talk Radio. There's a little form there. It's not that difficult. You click on my name, I think, which is highlighted in green, and then it goes to, contact this person. And so you can contact me that way. I hope I've explained that sufficiently. I know some people don't, you can also leave a message at 503-231-8032. God, I've almost forgotten that number. I think that's it. 503-231-8032. I hope that's it. And you can leave a message there for the staff, and they'll pass on a message to me. But yeah, if you're serious, if you're interested, do we have any other callers? Is Mark still waiting?
Yes, I am. Paul, I see a great change that's possible. The right wing could be destroying itself. And this could be symbolized by Musk's Nazi salute. He has conducted the greatest assault. There are boycotts. There are resignations all across the country. Never has the federal government been so assaulted by the elite trying to replace the whole government with bootlickers. So I think there's reason to be encouraged. There's only a 217 to 215 majority of the Republicans. They are destroying themselves and refusing to see that NPR and PBS and food stamps and Medicaid are vital.
Well, that's an interesting point. I've been thinking about that and talking to some people about the idea that they're definitely undermining their some of their core constituencies in attacking the Postal Service, the national parks. I mean, look, how many millions of people of all types and stripes you love our national parks
and USAID.
And on and on. The thing is, do they actually have the capability, or do they even have a strategy for not necessarily even worrying about the midterms, because, you know, the midterms could transform the political landscape. Do they have the capability of instituting something that enables them not to even worry? I mean, that's the $5 million question is, are they actually instituting a kind of a coup that is able to weather things like actual elections, congressional elections? That's the huge question. That's why people shouldn't rest on that hope or idea and organize like the people in St. John's are doing and creating neighborhood base, because, you know, just the variety and diversity of ways of resisting could be our biggest strength. And the weakness of their side is this kind of uniformity and this playing to this myth at this point of the
tsunami of lies. Trump is he's the most popular president in history.
Right, but their lies are able them to obfuscate what they're doing. So it's not necessarily, is it a weakness or is it a strength? That's the question. That's why we can't wait and we have to actually organize. And that's why I was so taken by Abe and Tracy's show yesterday. Who I often disagree with in various ways, politically, ideologically, but I thought that was really a brilliant move on their part to be tuned in, like I obviously haven't been, to what's going on the ground here in Portland, where KABU is based, and this group called Worth Fighting for St. John's, and that's why I was really interested if anybody else out there is actually doing that kind of organizing, thinking about doing that organizing, involved in stuff that's along those lines. We haven't gotten any, so maybe it's just kind of new, fresh. Maybe we'll hear more of that popping up. Anyway.
At the same time, China and BRICS are so different than they were 5 years ago, and BRICS represents 55% of the world's people. The U.S. represents 4.4%.
Right. But the point I'm making, Mark, is that we can't rely upon all that.
No.
The task is on us.
We can't censor. We can't simply ignore that China is dominant and then we are subordinate.
No, but that's not the point I'm making. The point is, whatever happens with China, whatever happens, you know, how do we ourselves here now join together and organize in a way that is able to, you know, add to the various types of resistance, whether it comes from, you know, I've seen National Park Service people have an alternative group that's resisting. There's various forms of resistance. How do we in our individual community, neighborhoods, whatever, how do we get together and organize?
We mend our own pockets and we don't fire 7,000 IRS workers.
Right. Well, you don't seem to want to get into the spirit of it, but that's okay.
Well, thank you for your passion.
All right. Thank you, Mark. So, yeah, I'll just repeat, you know, check it out. You know, they're very clear about not necessarily wanting to be a model. They're just doing what they're doing, but I admire what they're doing. This Worth Fighting for St. John's, and I do hope, and again, contact me through, you know, the KABU website, or call KABU 503-231-8032. You can call, you know, right at the end of the show, maybe you'll be able to get through to me or Ty, 503-231-8187. That's the number right now. Do we have any other callers, Ty? It doesn't look like it. Okay. Well, we're about out of time. If you have a last quick thought, please call up 503-231-8187. I know I've been giving a couple different numbers there. But yeah, I'd really like to see more along those lines. I remember when I first came to Portland, I got involved with the Alliance newspaper, which was a really admirable, local journalistic effort, which was kind of the voice of the progressive community, and it grew out of the Alliance for Social Change. I don't know if anybody remembers the Alliance for Social Change, which was basically a reaction to Reaganism. You know, so maybe this is similar to that, a reaction to Trumpism, you know, Reaganism on steroids. And they formed this umbrella group of progressive, you know, social change activist, whatever, organizations across the Portland metro area, and became an actual organization. And their kind of their house internal newsletter, as it were, was the Alliance newspaper. The Alliance for Social Change. Oh, our history. Oh, I've just lit up the boards, but I can't take any of your calls because we don't have any time left. Sorry. Call up next week, or maybe you're waiting to talk to me personally, in which case, let Ty know and I will talk to you. But I got to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Ty, for running the board. Bye, everybody.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 98.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
KBOO Portland.
Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hi there. Thanks for joining me. On this show,